Welcome to another episode of the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and today is December 28th, 2010. This is episode 441. More about this program and the guests that have provided us with such fascinating conversations can be found on our website, www.exogenynetwork.com. The Dawn of Shades always tries to bring interesting people right to the audience to hear about both new and old ideas. We focus on the people, places, and ideas that don't always make the mainstream news, the kinds of things that are frequently labeled as alternative or paranormal. Now, for the show tonight, if you would like to have a question asked, you can email me at gscott@exogenynetwork.com or send it through the virtual auditorium on Pal Talk by text. I do monitor the email during the program, so if you're listening outside of the virtual auditorium and would like to have a question answered, please email it to me, and I will ask the question for you. In the virtual auditorium, just put it into text, and I'll try and see the screen scrolls. If I don't catch it the first time, feel free to repeat it again. And for those of you who are listening in on a podcast, please go ahead and email me as well. I'll try to get your questions answered for you, too. For those of you who like to feel connected, I can be found on Facebook and Twitter, so you can link to me there. There's also a Dawn of Shades fan page on Facebook, so you can look for that, too. For the readers and the foodies, check out the articles and blogs. You can find some material that just might interest you. If you're a consumer, I regularly voice my opinions on products on my blogs, especially when it's a personal experience. So you can think what I, you can see what I think of gizmos and gadgets, world events, and local ones, too. Now, for tonight's program, it's the last one in 2010. I'll be returning to you next week with a whole new year and more fantastic events will be unfolding in the world we live in. What kinds of things are you looking forward to in the coming year as we draw ever closer to that ominous date known as December 21st, 2012, the end of the world? Yeah. This past year has seen me make a number of changes, some by choice, some by luck of the draw, as I'd say. I became a grandmother for the first time, and I have to confess that is one beautiful and angelic baby, no matter what the parents have to say about it. I have temporarily relocated to the Mississippi Gulf Coast and left the city lights and beignets behind in New Orleans. Lots of changes, and I'm looking forward to great things in the coming year, too. Now, tonight's guest is a psychic as well as the Empress of Duct Tape. She has hosted her own show, so she's familiar with the radio. And so I would like to welcome Julia K. Cole to the program tonight. Julia, while I know you're the Empress of Duct Tape, the audience might like to know a little bit more about you. So would you be so kind as to introduce yourself?
Well, will do. I am Julia K. Cole. I'm a psychic medium, also a spiritual consultant, better known as life coach. And let me see what else. I had this thing about duct tape, and people were always asking me about the duct tape. Well, it's a spiritual teaching tool that I use, and yes, it has spiritual qualities. But simple roll of duct tape is not just for quick fixes around the house anymore. You too can become more spiritually aware with a roll of duct tape. Yes, that's my philosophy. And I also... Well, that's about it. I'm a mother. I have five, well, grown kids now, and I'm a cat collector. I got all kinds of kitty cats and everything, but yeah, that's me in a nutshell, people. Yeah. I know. I just, and I'm also a, you know, the little known fact, I'm also a cure for insomnia.
No. I got to thinking about the duct tape thing. We were talking about it earlier because, you know, anytime we talk about Julia K. Cole, the next word is duct tape. But we got our one rear view mirror on the outside of the van damaged about a year ago in the parking lot. And it's a heated mirror, and I have to order it, and I haven't gotten around to it and whatnot. So for the last year, it's been held on with duct tape.
Ah, be still, my fluttering heart. Yeah,
yeah, it's kept it functioning and all that. And yeah, duct tape. Duct tape is wonderful stuff. I've fixed many a thing with duct tape myself. It's gotten me out of a sticky situation a time, too.
Oh, it's gotten me out of many sticky situations, of course. By the same token, it's put me into a lot of sticky situations, if you get my meaning. Anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know there is a story going, making its rounds about you at a conference and something about a duct tape bustier.
Yeah, it was the first ever paranormal conference that I attended. It was one that was being held here in where I live in Louisville, Kentucky. And everybody was kind of getting bored, okay? It's not nothing to disparage, you know, the conference. It was getting kind of dry, but because it had been raining, because nobody could go outside. I mean, we had a torrential downpour, and it just rained off and on all that day. And a dear friend of mine, who is an experienced paranormal investigator, challenged me. And in front of everybody, he goes, "I don't believe you're the duct tape diva." Okay? He goes, "You got to prove it. You know, what's this talk about duct tape? I don't see any duct tape on you." I said, "Well, you know, bring me a roll and I'll show you duct tape diva." And they got me a big roll of duct tape because you're not a ghost hunter unless you have a roll of duct tape, right? Okay? And I went in and I fashioned a duct tape bustier bodice kind of thing. And I walked out into the conference with it on. And I kind of livened the party after that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I got everyone that was there to autograph it. Of course, I took it off first, and then everybody autographed it. But they were holding a silent auction to raise money for a children's hospital. And the bodice that I wore and had autographed by several well-known paranormal investigators brought $250 for the fundraiser. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're still talking about that. That happened, what, back in 2006, and they're still talking about it.
Uh-huh. Well, that's always, you know, a little fun in paranormal. I mean, we wouldn't want everybody to think that we're all dead as the ghosts that we chased, right?
Exactly. And I have a lady in Minnesota. She makes jewelry, and I didn't know I had a fan club, Gia, Duct Tape Diva fan club. And the lady fashioned me some earrings. They look like little tiny rolls of duct tape. They dangle down, you know, they're really pretty.
Uh-huh.
She made two pairs, and one pair was sold at auction to raise money for the Leukemia Foundation. And that
uh-huh.
brought, I forgot how much money that brought, but yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I had the other
stuff.
Pair, by the way.
Uh-huh.
I wear those. I actually wear those, yeah.
Well, that's kind of cool. Any plans for new duct tape garments in the near future?
Well, you know, I'm in the midst of writing my memoirs, which is entitled The Zen of Duct Tape, An Empress is Born. Catchy title.
Mm-hmm.
And it has my life story, how I got to be who I am, and it has all throughout the book, it has little spiritual connotation, you know, duct tape, anecdotes and everything, and also in the back of the book explain what because the Zen of Duct Tape is, you know, my own personal developed philosophy. And hopefully in 2011, it'll be available for people to purchase, you know. With every purchase, of course, you get a strip of duct tape that I've autographed as a bookmark. But, it's been a very healing process for me. And I'm working with a friend of mine who's an artist on developing duct tape tarot cards. Yeah.
Duct tape tarot cards.
Yes. Instead of the pentacles, you have little rolls of duct tape, you know, and so forth.
Uh-huh.
I'm writing a companion book to help people use the cards. Yeah. There's been talk off and on to do a duct tape diva, you know, empress of the the duct tape calendar, but, you know, no, that's going a little too far.
You know, that's interesting. I did, a friend of mine is the creator of tarot cards. She calls them oracle cards, but they're essentially it's a form of tarot card for animals. And they're on the website for anybody who wants to take a look at them. And they're really cool. I wouldn't tell her this, but I regard them as like tarot for dummies. It's tarot cards for people like me that aren't tarot readers.
Yeah.
Because everything's written right on the card. You don't have to memorize
I like that. I'm going to have to go over and check that out.
Yeah.
I collect duct tape, but I also collect decks of tarot cards, too.
I really, really, really like these cards. And I've actually had some tarot readers use them. And they said that they were just as effective. It was, you know, the nuances of meaning were slightly different. But you, even though they were geared for animals, you could use them for human questions just as easily.
Oh. Yeah, I have a set of cat tarot cards. Go figure that one out. Yeah, someone had gave me, and they had, you know, it's, you know, all cats and everything. Yeah, but yeah, I had to check that out because I do collect tarot cards of all kinds. I love them.
Yeah, you'll have to check them out because they are really, really fun. I really, really like them. I'm gonna have to get Angelica Del Mar is her name. I'm gonna have to get her to come back on the program one night because she's a lot of fun too, and. The cards are really unique. They're different. And they are geared for people who don't want to spend years learning how to use a deck of cards. And that's me. I have the patience of the average three-year-old, as well as the forever question, why? Yeah, I'm the perennial three-year-old.
Yeah, it's a whole different language. It's like I always tell people, I said, well, you know, what's it like to learn tarot? And I said, well, I put it up there with learning English. It's, you know, it's just as confusing sometimes. But some people just have a natural knack for it. I wasn't one of them. I had to take classes. So. Excuse me, I have a bit of a cold tonight.
Yeah, you got a cold and I've got the flu. And so, you know, I'm drinking my hot chocolate and being a good doobie tonight. Just not a whole lot of boundless energy jumping around for me tonight, I have to admit. But, you know, this is the last program of the year, and, you know, when we were talking about what we were going to talk about on tonight's program, we had mentioned some things like about the future.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody's all up in arms about December 21st. 2012, the world is coming to an end. Or some people say 12-12-20, or 12, but whichever day in December, obviously December's the hot month. You know, do you see anything as a huge end-of-the-world kind of event?
Well, the only thing that I'm seeing is that, you know, we're already moving towards an expansion of consciousness, and of course, whenever you have such a wide number of people raising their consciousness and shifting it into one direction, of course, you're going to have a little bit of chaos going on. As far as 2012 is concerned, it's going to be like Y2K, okay? Because you're going to wake up, you're going to watch the little hand go to 12, and then there's going to be a lot of disappointed people, let's just put it that way, on that day.
I don't understand is everybody's life so miserable they're hoping that everybody just comes to an end on that day?
Well, you know, I tell you, there is a lot of misery out there, and that old saying, misery loves company, well, that holds true, but, you know, believe it or not, they are in the minority, and their numbers are dropping because of the raising of the consciousness. People, you know, I've been watching everybody on Facebook, and I noticed that whenever I have a particular thought, I notice that everybody has a similar thought, and that shows to me that, you know, more and more people are being connected on a higher level of conscious awareness. And so that means the numbers of miserable people are dropping. So But they're out there, and they're loud, too, honey. They're loud, and they're marching around. But it all comes back to religious programming, because a lot of dogmatic people, I'm not talking about your spiritual people, I'm talking about people who are just very militant, and they believe that the end of the world, and they want it to come because they believe that their chosen deity is righteous and, you know, it's going to bring forth all this blah, blah, blah. And so whenever you have someone who has such, you know, such belief, they do parade around it and they do pray for it. They pray for the destruction, yes. And you got it from all cultures. It's not just you got the, you know, the radicals of all religions, not just one, but all religions who are praying for the destruction of their perceived enemies. So, of course, you're going to have all this confusion. So, yeah, in answer to your question, there are a lot of miserable people and they're wanting it. Yeah, I mean, I came from a religion.
You know, the same mindset, I'll kill you, that'll change your mind.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And I'm like, whoa, you know, what happened to this turn the other cheek stuff?
Well, you know, and the thing of this, people, you know, and those of us who've been turning our cheeks, we've ran out of cheeks, you know, 20 years ago, so we're getting fat up and everything, so we're, you know, and it's just a lot of intolerance. There's a lot of intolerance to go around. Here, have some, you know, and you know, none of the teachings, because I did, you know, make an effort to study all religions. And none of their teachers, their first teachers, none of them taught this intolerance. Okay, this gradually came along and just, you know, snowballed. And there's many of us who are putting a stop. We're just saying no. That's my philosophy, just say no. You know? But the end of the world, it is not a physical ending of the world. It is the end of a certain cycle. A certain thought form. We're in, you know, it's like the age of Aquarius. It ends at a particular time. And that's where people, they get misconstrued. They get confused because they don't stop and think of, you know, a lot of talk about people being dumbed down. They'd rather follow the leader than stop and think for themselves. And this is with all walks of life. And me and other people are teaching people. That's what I do, because a lot of people come to me basically to help get back on track to start thinking for themselves, because a lot of people have been crippled by religion, by politics, by whatever, all the combination, all the above, and now they're looking for assistance on how to start thinking for themselves again. And unfortunately, we've got an administration who wants to do everything for us and wants to create a nanny state, you know, and everybody, you know, we've run our course through this sense of entitlement. You know, I'm entitled to everything and I don't have to do nothing attitude. And that's not gotten us anywhere but trouble. You know, whatever happened to, you know, work for your meal? You know, instead of handing it to you, you know, I live by the words of Jesus where he says, teach a man to fish and you feed him for life. They're not doing that. They're saying,
right.
No, let me do it for you. No, I don't want you to do it for me. I want to do it myself. And more people are breaking free from that. So you've got this conflict going on. You got the ones who want either their deity to do your thinking for you, or one of your political people to do the thinking for you. So you got all these little weird
Well, it was
matches.
Like recently we had that bill. I'm thinking that it was Bill 501, whatever bill it was. It was regarding our food. And the big thing was it was supposed to make our food supply the safest in the world. Well, it was supposed to decide for us where we bought our food, how much we paid for our food, what kind of food we could buy, and how much we could buy. You know, we used to call that mom and dad, and we were under 18.
Right.
You know, come on. If I want to take the risk of eating raw oysters or drinking raw milk, let me do so. If I want to raise vegetables in my backyard and sell some at the farmer's market, I feel I should be able to do so. You know, and we don't need anybody telling us what to do. Well, the bill was shot down. And I was talking to somebody about it, and they were so disappointed because they were looking forward to safe food. And I'm like, you know what? We are legislating ourselves into, forget the freedom thing.
Yeah.
You know, we want Big Brother to think for us.
Exactly. And you know, people, you know, I tell you, the guys that, they were brothers who wrote and produced, and I believe they directed too, The Matrix. And that was very, you know, that was a very disturbing story. Believe it or not, a lot of people don't realize this, but this is an old story retold, The Matrix. If you go back to the old television show, Lost in Space, they had a similar story where the machines had taken over, you know, doing the thinking, and then they came to a point where they needed a human being and everything. I remember that episode very well because they captured Penny. but it was really, it's an old story that was rehashed and redone in the fear of machines taking, I mean, Rod Serling, Ray Bradbury, they all had these similar stories of machines taking over. And what they were trying to tell us, it's not the literal machine. It's Big Brother, okay? He represents the machine. And, you know, read 1984, folks, if you want to get the, you know, what scared out of you. We're living it. And the thing of it is, people are trying to break free from the Matrix, and that's what it is. And there's people who want to stay plugged in because they want... they want that. They're still in an infantile stage. Actually, they're even worse. They're still in the fetus stage. They don't want to leave the womb. And we're dealing with, you know, people of that mindset. Yes, they're in, and it's kind of confusing for the rest of us because you're looking at grown adults, and here they are acting like a fetus, you know. They want to stay in the womb and have someone take care of them. You know, and it's really causing issues. There's more, you know, there's more sickness now than ever before. Yeah, we're creating cures, but while we're doing it, we're also creating more disease because people are not getting up.
I guess a lot of people are not understanding that with freedom comes responsibility.
Exactly.
Responsibility for yourself and for your family and for your friends and for your fellow man, even.
Yeah. It's okay, you know, to give someone, you know, I you know, I don't like giving nobody a handout. I like to give them a hand up, you know,
uh-huh.
Because
yeah.
it's just something that it does a man good. You show me a man who has worked a full day and earned an honest wage, I will show you a man full of confidence, a man full of love, and a man willing to share. Show me a man who is not working and who has everything is handed to him, and I'll show you a very selfish, a very unloving and ungiving individual. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And it's just plain logic. And if our race is to survive, if we are to survive, we have to stand up and say no. I'll do it myself. If I need your help, you know, I'll call on you.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, don't do it for me. Let me do it myself. It's like, you know, if we, the story of the butterfly. I don't know, are you familiar with the story of the butterfly?
Well, I know a lot of different butterfly stories, but I'm...
Well, this one was about a man who saw the butterfly struggling to get out of his cocoon. And he thought that he would help the butterfly by cutting the cocoon and releasing him out early. But what the man didn't understand was that the struggle was not so much a hardship on the butterfly as it was a benefit to the butterfly, because you see, once the butterfly was released from his cocoon early, he wasn't strong enough to fly. His wings,
uh-huh,
and his legs were weakened, and he died. And he,
uh-huh,
because, you know, he needed to, you know, he had to work his way out of that cocoon in order to, you know, gain that strength, you know, work those little butterfly muscles in order to find his way into the world and live his little life as a butterfly. And it's the same way with people. And, you know, I tell people all the time, please don't ask me to think for you. I can barely do it for myself. So if you're dependent upon me, we're both screwed because I can barely do it on, you know, on my own. But I do have hope. I do, you know, I have, you know, Spirit has allowed me to see as far as 2014. And I see a beautiful community being developed, worldwide community. And we're heading for it, even though we can't really see it right now. But I've seen it through through the dream states. They usually put me into a deep sleep to show me. And they showed me a beautiful one-world community. And it was something that really blew my mind because I really didn't believe it was going to happen. And they said, but know this, before you can get here, you have to go through the chaos. You have to go through the conflict, meaning what that their word for war. I found that Spirit doesn't have, you know, that's the word they use is conflict. And they showed me, they said, but do not be afraid. Do not be afraid because fear is only there to show you the way out, not to hold you prisoner. And you will, you know, the worldwide global family will stand together and they will rise above this. But it's going to, you know, we still have got some more, you know, to do. But we have to stand up for ourselves and you have to be ready. And that means you have to be prepared mentally and emotionally as well as, of course, physically. And don't do it out of fear. Do it because, you know, it's logical. Because if you live, like with you, you live down near where you know it's going to be floods and hurricanes. Okay?
Yeah.
So you know to be prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
Ahead of time. You don't wait for the hurricane to get there, you know. And you don't wait for the floods, you know, the flood water to be up to your elbows before you decide, oh, now's a good time to go get a boat. Or now's a good time to go seek, you know, higher ground. You do that beforehand. And you do it, and you make sure you pack enough to help your neighbor out. Always do it with the other person in mind. Take care of yourself and your family first, and always add extra for someone else. You know, it's an old custom my mother raised us with. Whenever she set the table, she always set an extra place setting just in case somebody showed up.
Uh-huh.
And I found out that was an old Jewish custom. That you always, but a lot of people, it depends on who you ask, a lot of people say, well, it's for Elisha and everything, but I found out that it was for, you know, for a stranger who was in need or for your neighbor who doesn't have something to eat. It was always be prepared ahead of time. And it was, you know, we still follow that tradition today. And, you know, people need to start thinking, I mean, really thinking about things and for themselves. And it's not hard to do, folks. It really isn't. It really isn't. And there's, you know, there's a lot you can do right there in your own neighborhood. And there's people in need right there in your own neighborhood. You know, the old saying is, think global, act local. And I always believe in taking care of my neighbor, you know, the neighbors who are, you know, within my grasp first before I go out to other countries. Because it's an energy. If we take care of our own first, the energy expands, and it does. It means that, you know, we can do more for other people. But the
future...
Well,
we've got a saying, you know, if you want to make the world a better place, start in your own little, the corner of your own little yard.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and you plant some flowers there and spruce it up, and pretty soon, you know, the neighbor does the same thing, and it spreads in the whole street, and then the whole block, and then the whole city.
And it does. I'm going to tell you, what you just said is the absolute truth, because I was guided to move where I'm at right now. And it's considered, well, at one time it was considered one of the worst places that you could live. And, yeah, the streets were cluttered with garbage. It was what, in all intents and purposes, it was called the ghetto for a good reason. A lot of run-down homes, a lot of trash built up everywhere. And when I moved here, because I kept saying, why do you want me to be here? I didn't want to move here. I didn't want to bring my kids here. But I knew I had a reason. So I'm one of these people, I'm very fastidious. I don't like garbage. I don't like it. So I started picking up around my house and in front of other people's houses, too. And within a year, I noticed everybody up the street was doing the same thing. And then it went to, across the street, and everybody across the street all the way up for six blocks. Everybody was, and now everybody picks up their trash every day. We got little old ladies out there with their brooms sweeping the sidewalks up and down. You know, it catches on. It does catch on, and it starts with you. You know, it always starts with you. And I'm really pleased with, you know, how, and everything's much cleaner now. The mayor came in, couldn't believe how cleaned up everything was. We did it on our own. We did it without the government's help. We did. Aww. And we continue to do so because we knew that nobody, you know, because they gave up on this part of town. They did. Now they're doing rehab work because now they see there's potential here again.
Uh-huh.
And it really blossomed out. And it all started with, you know, me, and I have to include my neighbor Rosie, cause she got out there too. She was, you know, 80-something years old out there with her little garbage bag, you know, and her little chihuahua picking up the garbage. And we're very pleased with ourselves because we started something good.
Yeah, and that's, you know, really how it starts is you start in your own neighborhood and before you know it can spread. And at the same time, the reverse can be true. I've seen it where one place gets dumpy and it spreads like a cancer.
Yeah, and that's what was happening here because it was, you know, and it's happening, you know, it was happening all over, but you know, we're reversing it one, you know, one neighborhood at a time, one city at a time, and it's a groovy thing. I like it, and I'm very pleased with, you know, I found out I had some really good neighbors. And, you know, there was a lady that I listened to about a year ago, and she said, you know, the problem with the world today is nobody sits out on their front porches anymore like they used to.
Yeah.
And yeah. Nobody says hello anymore. And I was sitting there thinking, I said, well, not in my neighborhood. And, you know, when it's warm outside, we pull up our lawn chairs right out in front of somebody else's house and, you know, start up a conversation and everything. But you don't see that everywhere, you know, because when I was a kid, that's what you did. You know, you go and pull up a lawn chair in the summertime in front of somebody's house and sit there and chit-chat and what have you. And we do it here. And everybody looks after everybody. And this is supposed to have been the poorest and the worst place to live, but we've got good neighbors. I found that out.
Uh-huh.
And they look after. And, you know, you'd be surprised. You know, you may have good neighbors. You don't even know it because, you know, you don't sit on your front porch or your back porch. You don't say hello. You don't know unless you try.
Yeah.
And everything.
Yeah. But, well, I have to admit, having moved out of New Orleans, the area I lived in was commercial. So I did not have any neighbors. You know, it was high fences and no people after business hours. So I didn't have neighbors where I lived there. But I now live in the county. I don't live in a town. And it's a little community. And everybody seems to know everybody else. A lot of them have lived here their entire life. And we're trying out the living small theory, okay? I'll admit, I'm not doing well some days. It's a case of design, I think, too. But both Greg and I have things that we do, okay? We both work on computers. That requires desk space, and a travel trailer, it doesn't offer desk space. You know, I sew and I cook, and heaven help anybody who ever tries to cook a real meal on an RV stove. Whoever designed them should be shot at dawn. I'm not impressed with the design. They take up the same amount of space. I've had gas stoves in the past that were apartment sized, and this is actually a little bit bigger even than an apartment sized stove. So I can't figure out why it's so poorly designed. But it is. It wasn't designed to cook in, I'll tell you that much. It's certainly not to do normal kind of cooking. Since I write about food, it is normal cooking that I do. And I found it very interesting, to say the least.
Sewing, I have no idea how in the world I would sew, to be honest, in here. It's just too small. No place to set the sewing machine, really, other than the table, which has the computer on it. You know, yeah. But, you know, I'm looking at the space, and I'm going, you know, this space is wasted. This space is wasted. This could have been better designed. Storage capacity was poorly designed. And, you know, I've looked at micro housing. I've been studying it for a couple of years now. Because to me it sounds like a wonderful idea. The whole idea of building smaller houses that are better designed with higher quality materials and better efficiency makes a lot of sense rather than these McMansions, you know, that have been so popular and led to our huge real estate crash. Because we really don't need all these rooms. I think about the house I had in New Orleans. I could have put four of these travel trailers in it. And I really didn't have that much more space. You know, but, yeah. So I've been looking at a number of companies. And if you research online for people who are interested, if you Google in micro houses and small house society, there is a small house society. And they have a number of resources listed there. Tumbleweed Houses is probably the best known. They've been on a number of television and radio programs. And there was a Katrina Cottage that was sort of an offshoot of one of their designs. But they actually have a house all the way down to 89 square feet. 89 square feet is really, really small. I'm not sure I could survive 89 square feet. And the kitchen design, I am not thrilled with because of the fact that I do cook. But another problem with some of their designs is they tend to use a loft as your sleeping space, which means climbing a ladder to go to bed. Now, Julia, I know, I happen to know that you and I are in the same ballpark of age, and I'm looking at a future where I'm not going to become any more agile ever again. Crawling up a ladder to go to bed just doesn't sound like the wisest idea I could come up with. You know, I don't know about you, but no, I don't think I want to go up a ladder to go to bed. So I do need something big enough that the bed is on the same level as the living quarters, or there is stairs. Stairs would be okay, but ladders, nah, I don't think so. But for younger ones, you know, why not ladders? I think about when, you know, 20 years ago when I was chasing kids and whatnot, hey, I don't know. Thrilled to have a place I go to bed that a toddler couldn't crawl in bed with me and then wet my bed. Right?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I was sitting here thinking, I said that would be a great place for my cats to hang out, you know, and then they could just pounce me as I walk, you know, under it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, claws and all, yeah.
Oh, look, a nice wildebeest, you know, blink.
Yeah. Let's bite it on the throat, too, while we're at it, right?
But, yeah, 89 square feet, I can't imagine, because my butt's that big, so I would need twice the space just to, you know, get my butt in the door. I got
wide
angle.
Well, bigger designs, but the 89 square feet is actually, it's on wheels. It's not, it's legally considered a travel trailer, but it's not designed for frequent moving. It is on wheels, and you can move it, but it is not, you know, it's not designed to be whizzing across the United States yet. It's not aerodynamic or anything like that. It's actually kind of cute. It's really cute if you look at the designs. But, you know, and like, okay, the Gypsy Vardo, which is the traditional Gypsy wagon, they're very ornate. I was like, you know, I want one that has all that ornate carving and painting. And, you know, I want something really ridiculous, the gingerbread house on wheels. Yeah,
I like that. That would be. I'm gonna design my own, you know, little RV kind of thing. I decided now it's still work. I'm still working on the design, but I got this idea from one of the homeless ladies. We call her Trash Can Annie.
Mm-hmm.
Really lovely person, great lady. And she's got all of her belongings, you know, in a grocery cart. You know, it's one of those typical, you know, a homeless lady, and I got to thinking, I said, you know, if you put several of those together, you know, kind of, you know, cut out, you know, the side parts so they can all, you know, make one big, huge car.
Uh-huh.
And then duct tape, you know, to, you know, insulate it and everything, and make a little roof, and then you get some kind of outboard motor. I could, I'm still working on it, of course. But
you know, I think you're going to have a real hard time licensing that thing to take it down the highway.
Well, who said I was going to go down the highway? I'll just go down the, you know, side road. Take the long way around. But no, seriously, I think I could pull that off. You know, lots, I got all kinds of duct tape. I could spruce it up. I could change it every year because I got duct tape in every color, you know. So,
I have to admit that my goal in life is to have a bit more firm roots than several shopping carts of duct tape. We actually are looking for property. It was been kind of put on hold for the holidays and a major repair on the van. But we are in search of some property so that we put the travel trailer on it, and then when we decide what we want to build, go ahead and build it. Because, to be honest, you know, we're still between this, do we really want to go really small, or do we want to go just sort of small? so, you know, this travel trailer is sort of like a shock treatment of sorts. Cram us in a small space with poor design, and so we can learn what works and what doesn't work. And I can tell you some things already that don't work. But, like this particular travel trailer is designed with bunks, okay? I don't know who was going to sleep in those bunks, but they better have been very, very short and accustomed to sleeping in coffin-like spaces. So I'm pretty sure it was designed for vampires.
Or maybe anorexic midgets, you know. Who knows?
I'm not kidding. The top bunk, I don't know how you got into it, but you couldn't sit up in it. If you were more than 2.5 feet tall, you couldn't sit up there. And so how are you going to swing your legs out through that 24-inch wide opening to get out?
Yeah, that wouldn't be for me because I haven't swung my legs over anything in years. And if I tried, I'm pretty sure they had to call EMS.
I was pretty sure if I crawled in there, somebody was going to have to rip out a wall to get me out.
The jaws of life.
Yeah. So, you know, to be honest, I took the mattresses off of them, and I use them as shelves. But they're the worst devised shelving unit I've ever seen. Sissy likes it. We have a file box, because, see, there's also no room for a filing cabinet, which we really need. But the filing box is there, and she uses that as a step to jump into the bottom bunk where her safe little box is, her little house.
She's
my little dog with an attitude, big attitude.
Now we know what those things were made for. It was actually made just for the dogs and the cats. The humans have to sleep outside. It was designed by a dog.
Oh, in the bedroom. It's like, oh, please don't close the door. I can't breathe. It has a queen-size bed in it with, like, 12 inches on either side. And there's a 12-inch wide closet. Now, what are you supposed to put in a 12-inch wide closet? As far as I'm concerned, this is a big thing that was put there in the corner so I could bang my elbow and my head on it. So, you know, I've already seen some things that, in terms of design. Because I was like, you know what, you'd have been better off just making wall-to-wall bed and putting a curtain up, and then I wouldn't be claustrophobic and worried about not enough air.
What you could do is just go buy another one and just weld it together with that one and, you know, cut out the middle, and then you have a whole... Then you'd have a whole,
a whole trailer. Yeah.
A whole trailer.
Well, no, actually, because I still am thinking along, cause travel trailers are not energy efficient, okay? I'll be the first one to admit it. I regarded it as somewhat green because this is recycled. We didn't buy it new. So it is, you know, recycling directly with the same purpose it was originally designed for, which is the ultimate in recycling. So anytime you're buying a used car or you used anything, in a sense, you are still recycling because you're continuing to use that item for the purpose it was originally made. But I regarded this as a temporary thing while we experiment with the living small.
And while I've never seen myself choosing to live in a McMansion, at the same time, I may decide that living small isn't for me at all. You know, I don't know yet. You know, I've been advocating it a long time, but it's one thing to say, this is a really great idea. It's another one to live the idea. And a lot of people, you know, I remember when my kids were little, all these parenting advice books, they were written by people who had never had children.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, if I'm going to say this is a wonderful idea, maybe I should try it out for myself. You know, it's just like when I write about cooking. You know, I don't write about cooking in Asia. I write about cooking on the Gulf Coast. I don't cook in Asia. I don't have a clue about cooking in Asia. I want to know about cooking in Asia. I'll call my sister. I have a sister that lives in Singapore. That's part of Asia, right?
Right.
But, you know, I don't have a clue about what goes on over there, or even buying groceries. I do know how you do it here on the Gulf Coast. And so I write about what I know about. How can I continue to advocate the idea of smaller houses and more efficient lifestyles if I'm continuing to live the same way as I always did?
No, that's a good question.
I have to, you know, if you're going to talk the talk, you better walk the walk, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, you know, we're walking the walk. Some days I'm sure Greg's not real happy with me as the rain starts and we're crammed inside, because I'll admit we live a lot outdoors in clear weather. But when it's rainy and cold and nasty, then you're kind of confined indoors and there's not a lot of space. So, you know, anybody who's considering living in a small quarters, look at your relationship first. If it's not good, it's not going to get better when you put it in a small space. I'm fortunate. We have a very good relationship, so it's weathering as well. But I think about some people I know, you crammed them in an 8x30 travel trailer and only one would emerge after a week.
That would be me. I could live with my cats, I think, maybe. I don't know, because I got one that would take up the whole space, but he'd have to live outside. No, me and my daughter, we live in a 3-bedroom house, and she's got her room, I got my room, and every once in a while we'll meet up in the hallway. So it works out.
Yeah, I mean, you do. I mean, there's no privacy. There's no, I mean, if you're feeling like getting away from it all, you can put a pillow over your head. You know, there really isn't any truly alone time for anybody. And so you do, if there's cracks in the relationship, you will find them out quick, which may be a good thing for a lot of people. You know, they would, if they lived together in a travel trailer for 6 months before they got married, they'd save themselves the expense of the divorce.
Oh, there you go. And there's something you could write about.
Yeah, because, I mean, seriously, you would find any problem you had in the relationship, you would find it in a space like this. You can't lose it. You know? Can't hide it. Yeah, it's going to come out. And I do have to admit, that's one thing I have noticed about a small space is that it would be very hard if you had a rocky relationship that would tend to get on each other's nerves. And so I'm very fortunate that I do have a partner that is, you know, talking about great things in your life, you know, and sometimes we fail to tell the important people in our life how important they really are. But I've always felt like your wife's partner, husband's wife, spouse, whatever, significant other, whatever tag you want to stick on them, they should be your biggest fan club, your loudest cheerleader. And I'm fortunate that that's true. And that's not true for everybody. And, you know, it's not true for me younger in life either. My first husband was definitely not. But that's just the way it is. You know, we live and learn. So, yeah.
That's a great thing, though, that now you traveled this far. And now you can say, I got somebody that really means something to me, and vice versa. That says a lot about who you are. It really does. And that's what I wish for everybody.
Well, you know, it's really nice because everybody gets down sometimes. It's like, oh, my God, I can't do this. I can't figure this out. I can't cope. And to have somebody, you know, essentially put starch in your spine and say, oh, yes, you can. Get your butt out there and do that. You know?
That's right.
And
that's
we all need that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and everything because it was, yeah. I'm hoping one day, you know, if I can find... Somebody had asked me, said, do you ever think you're going to get married again? And I said, not until, you know, Jesus Christ answers, you know, my, you know, I asked him. I haven't heard back from him yet. And I said, that'd be the only one that could put up with me. Seriously.
I used to be the same way. After I got divorced, I said, I am never, ever, ever doing this again. I am certainly not designed to be a wife. I must be the world's worst wife, et cetera, et cetera. And they had no intentions of ever. Now, I dated and stuff, but it was like, you know what? You have your space, I have my space. We meet once in a while when we feel like it, and that's it, you know? You're not going to live with me. I'm not going to live with you. That's just, you know. And no, eventually, and I'm lucky, you know. Greg's been my friend for a very, very long time. We were buddies for years. And, I mean, just buddies. I mean, we talked about bad relationships to each other, you know? And eventually it became something more. And I'm lucky to have my best friend as my significant other as well. You know,
see, that's
everybody.
The thing. That's what I tell people all the time. I said, you want someone who is your best friend. You know, you know, romance comes and goes. It goes out like one of those sparklers at 4th of July. I said, but you want your best friend as your life mate, you know. Now, that's my take on life. You know, I deal with a lot of people with relationship issues, and I said, you want your best friend. You really do.
Well, I really, you know, people talk about romance. To be honest, I really don't have a clue what romance is. I can't see myself bouncing around in ruffles and sprinkling rose petals. Okay, that's just not me. you know, romantic gifts. No, I can't see me there either.
Well, it all depends on what you see, you know, because romantic gifts mean, you know, it's something different. You know, for me, if a guy were to, you know, present me with a whole truckload full of duct tape, he's mine, okay? You can't have him. That one belongs to me.
Yeah.
I do get to keep the truck, right? You know, that to me is a romantic gift. Because I'm not the flower and candy person myself. I like power tools and I like duct tape. Yeah.
Oh, power tools. Power tools are our women's best friend. It's the greatest blunder. Well, you know, it used to be that because of the fact that men and women are engineered different, okay? We can get into the equality thing, that's a whole different ballgame. But we're muscles. Our muscles are different. Women do not have the same kind of upper body strength as men. And I'm talking averages on both sides, okay? I know some women that are way stronger than some men, and vice versa. But in general, women don't have the same upper body strength. Well, it used to be that, you know, hammers and sledgehammers and wrenches and all this stuff, it depended on strength and the ability to repeatedly bang that hammer or whatever. Now, I could bang a hammer with the best of them, and I've done a lot of building right alongside the guys, okay? But at the end of the day, there was a lot of things I couldn't do because I wasn't physically strong enough, even though I was stronger than the average woman. You know, I'd buck hay and stuff, too. You know, I know I can stack, or I used to be able to, stack a ton of hay before I went to work, you know? Excuse me. But the whole thing is with power tools is, you know, that circular saw, it cuts way faster than that one you had to go back and forth with. I've cut with that kind, too. You know, it takes a long time. And... You know, all the power tools really do. They equalize things. You know, I'm just as capable of using a drill as anybody else. I don't have to be strong to use it. So I do. I really love that.
Oh, I'm registered at Black & Decker, by the way, Ace Hardware Store. But yeah, that's where I'd be registered. I do. I love them. I go in and, you know, it's like, oh, God, I'm in heaven. And all the guys are sitting there looking at me and go, huh? Huh? And I go, seriously.
Oh, yeah, I remember years ago, this is well over 25 years ago, one Christmas I gave my mother an electric drill for Christmas. And I remember a family friend, she asked me what I'd gotten my mom for Christmas, and I told her electric drill. I thought she was going to come out of her chair and strangle me. I can't believe it. I said, that's what she wanted. To me, it seemed like my mom needed an electric drill. That's what she asked for Christmas, so I went and got it. It seemed reasonable to me. No, she thought I should got her flowers or perfume or candy or clothes or something. Well, my mom didn't, I mean, that wasn't her. You know, in a lot of ways, I guess I take after my mom. But, yeah, that same year, she gave me a shovel for Christmas.
Hey, you can always use a good shovel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, I have to admit, I needed the shovel, so even though it was under the tree with a bow on it, several times before Christmas, I took it outside and I used it. Then I cleaned it up and brought it back in and put it back under the tree.
But, yeah, it's just, yeah. I don't know, it's just, you know, breaking the barrier, even now, I find it hilarious because I go into any of these, you know, hardware stores and the guys are all looking at you funny because you're, you know, just salivating over, you know, certain, me, I do, anyway, tool, but I just love going in just to look. Of course, I head right to the duct tape aisle, you know.
I love the scroll saw. But guess what? It is time for us to take a break.
Alrighty.
Folks, so if I get the knot out of my tongue, folks, while we're away from your computer, check out our website, www.exogenynetwork.com. Stay tuned in the Dawn of Shades. We'll return with Julia K. Cole and more about our topics tonight in just a few minutes.
I can't feed on the power lives.
the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, with our guest, Julia K. Cole. And once again, I would like to remind everyone to visit our website, www.exogenynetwork.com. You can sign up for the newsletter, wander around, explore the website, and let me know what you think of it. There are links there to take you to blogs, Twitter, and even Facebook. And if you want to go straight to the blog, you can go to giascott.wordpress.com, and you can find out what kinds of things I've been up to lately. Now, as far as Paranormal Radio Network is concerned, Jerry Pippin will be joining the lineup starting next Monday night for some live programming. Don't miss it. I would also like to wish a longtime fan of this program a very special happy birthday. So, Joyce, I hope you have had a wonderful day today. Now, tonight's topic is a fun one, and if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can email it to me at gscott@exogenynetwork.com, and I will pass it on from there. If you're listening in on a podcast or think of it after the program has finished, you can go ahead and send it to me. I'll do my best to answer your questions, and if you have a comment, you get it added to the website or blog if you like. If you're in the virtual auditorium, just go ahead and put it in the text there, and I'm trying very hard to catch it as the screen scrolls. So, Julia, where exactly were we?
I was talking about power tools.
Oh, yeah, power tools, yeah. I love my scroll saw. And for women who are afraid of power tools, a scroll saw works exactly like a sewing machine. Instead of a needle that goes up and down, there's this itty-bitty little teeny blade, and instead of putting two pieces together, you're taking them apart. So you just draw out your pattern on the piece of wood, you start your handy-dandy little scroll saw, and you just guide it through on that line, and bingo, you have this wonderful little piece cut out. I've done a lot of crafts with my scroll saw, and I have to admit, I really, really like the scroll saw. You'd be amazed what I can cut out with a scroll saw.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, it is. And they do, when watching it, I'm like, well, dang, they invented the scroll saw, I think it was like 50 to 100 years before they invented the sewing machine. What took them so long? You know, it's the same thing. There's this little blade that goes up and down, and it cuts the wood. Now, granted, you can only cut wood up to, like, I'm thinking about an inch thick. And then depending on the size of the throat, which a typical scroll saw is going to have a 12-inch throat. They do make bigger industrial size ones, 24 and 36 inch throats, but I've always had the 12 inch one because I'm just not going to do that big of things. And when I'm using plywood, I cut them into 24 inch squares. And yeah, usually I'm making Christmas ornaments or crafts, so I draw out all my designs on my 24 inch piece, which is about as big as you can work with transferring designs anyhow. And then I go to the scroll saw and I start cutting them out. And you start on the edges, and you just kind of work your way around, and gradually the piece gets smaller, and there's not any problem making it fit. And I do. The scroll saw is wonderful, wonderful one. I do use the circular saw to cut, because for those of you who don't know, plywood normally comes in 4-foot by 8-foot sheets. And so you have to cut those sheets down, and I end up with 8 2x2 sheets. And that's what I actually use, is the 2x2 sheet. When I'm using plywood. So it is. It's fun, fun, fun. I love the power tools. Yeah, they do make life so much easier. And I have to admit, Greg's been working on our van, and even the air compressor and air-powered tools make that job easier for him. So there is something to be said for technology. A lot of these people are like, oh, let's go back to the 1800s and do everything by hand. Well, you know, that's a two-way street, you know. Maybe life was simpler, but I think everybody spent a whole lot of time working real hard.
Yeah. Yeah, let's be reasonable, people. You know, we can live simply, but keep the power tools and the duct tape.
Well, I think about it. I grew up with my great-grandparents as an active part of my life. And they were born in the 1800s. And so they lived that lifestyle. I mean, they went from horse and buggy to seeing a man land on the moon. And there was no one that was as much in love with convenience foods as my great-grandmother. And everyone that was advertised on the television she would trot herself down to the grocery store and demand that they ordered it in. And not, you know, those of you who are old enough to remember the 60s and the wonderful space-age foods we were blessed with, they didn't all deliver what they promised.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, I remember one, this was, I don't know if it was a hot cereal or a cold cereal, but it had these strawberries that were supposed to plump up just like fresh. Uh-huh. I remember she poured it out, and there were these hard, brown, wrinkled lumps. And she did whatever she was supposed to do to them to make them turn into these fresh, plump strawberries again. But they stayed hard, dry, brown, shriveled lumps. She was very disappointed. Yeah, you know, it's... some of the convenience foods just failed to deliver. And that cereal has gone the way of the dodo bird because it didn't work.
I remember when my mother got her first microwave oven when they became, you know, popular. And she tried everything. She microwaved everything. It was really nice to watch her have so much fun with such a, you know, something that now we take advantage of. But it was, you know, it was a new thing back then. And I remember the first time we tried to microwave a hot dog. That was real fun. So much so that me and my sister went through a whole package.
I remember our first microwave. Now, out of all my friends, we were the first family to get a microwave. So I guess my mother and father were both really into new and improved gizmos and gadgets. Anyhow, the microwave came home, and this is the old days. They didn't have that smooth front. They had a metal mesh with holes in it that went through to the microwave. And so, you know, if anything spattered on it, you were there with toothpicks picking it out. I remember that part, too. But you could make cupcakes in them, and they were the most hilarious things. You can't do it in a modern microwave. But you would take your cupcake wrapper and you'd put like a teaspoon of batter in the bottom of it. And you would turn on the microwave and it would instantly puff up to this huge cupcake. I mean, a cake mix could make like 400 cupcakes. And they were good. I mean, they didn't brown, but they were good. But you try to do a make a cupcake from scratch in there now. Now, I did... year or so ago, an article I wrote was about a mug cake, which you mix up this little dab of batter in a mug and cook it in there. And it's okay if you eat it warm with ice cream right away, but it's nothing to get excited about. But I remember those cupcakes, you know, because they were hilarious. And you could cook anything in those microwaves, but they must have been much, much higher powered than they are now.
They had to be. I had a possessed microwave. We like to call it the Amityville microwave oven. The one that I had for many, many years blew up on me, so I went to go buy a new one. And I caught it on sale at one of the local, you know, department stores. I was so pleased with the purchase, and I couldn't wait to get home. And I plugged it in, and because I love them, I love microwave popcorn. Okay, I love it. I don't know how they do it, but I love it. And I wanted to be the first one to use, you know, the microwave. So I plug it in, you know, and all set to go, right? And I'm sitting here, and I'm waiting for the popcorn and everything. I follow directions, you know, to the letter. And all of a sudden, I start hearing this moaning and groaning. It sounded like, I'm not kidding. I thought, you know, I had, you know, went into the Twilight Zone, you know, cat house or something. I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway, not that, you know, four-legged variety either. And I mean, it was literally moaning and groaning. And I followed the sound. It was coming from my microwave, you know, from my microwave. And I'm going, is it supposed to do that? I don't remember my other one doing that, right? And the little plate was going around and around, you know, with a bag of popcorn there. And the moaning and groaning just increased. And all of a sudden, I heard this loud humming, and sparks started flying everywhere. And it started jumping all over the counter. My microwave did.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm sitting there, and I'm yelling for the kids. Of course, they can't hear anything because one of them's got, you know, their earplugs in, you know, listening to music, and the other one's playing a video game, and they're not paying any attention. I could be getting mugged downstairs, and nobody would have heard me. And I'm sitting there screaming and everything, and I built up enough courage to run over there and pull the plug real quick, thinking that would make it stop, right? It didn't. It kept moaning and groaning and humming and jumping around and everything. So, you know, I remember what a friend of mine who's a paranormal investigator had told me, you know, whenever you know, because I'm thinking, oh, God, it's some kind of demon or something inside of my... So I get out the salt and just throw salt all over it, right? You know, and everything. And then I grab it and I pitch it out on the back porch while it's still making all that noise. Kids come down an hour later because I'm sitting here. I'm totally in shock. I'm just sitting here thinking, what do I do? You know, I'm praying because I'm thinking, oh, God, you know, Beelzebub has come to visit, and he's taken over my microwave. Anyway, you know, you want popcorn, dude. All I had to do is ask. But anyway, and I'm sitting there, and I goes, where's the microwave? I said, it's on the back porch. Don't go get it. Don't leave it alone because it was still making all that noise. So the next morning, I go out, and it's got, you know, of course, salt all over it and, you know, and everything. And I told my sons, I said, put it back in the box. We're taking it back to the store. And they go, Mom, you're crazy. And I said, don't plug it in, because I was still, you know, in hysterics and everything. So I take it back to the store, and I wouldn't touch it. I had my kids take it, you know, carry it all the way back. And we had to take the public bus, by the way. Uh-huh. And, of course, my son wasn't too happy about it. He goes, what is wrong with you? I said, just shut up, hold it, and sit up front. Don't sit near me with that thing. But we get there, and I tell the guy what happened. And, you know, and he's looking at me like, yeah, right, lady. Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. What drugs were you doing again? So he didn't believe me, of course. And so he takes it out of the box, and I'm jumping back because I'm expecting, you know, all these little pitchfork-wielding, you know, forces to come jumping out of the box. And he plugs it in, nothing happens. It's acting like a regular microwave oven, right? Of course it is, you know. And I said, just wait for it, because my bag of popcorn's still in there. And I said, just wait for it, just wait for it, just wait for it, okay? And he goes, oh, lady, there's nothing wrong with it. We'll just get you another one. I said, I don't want another one. Just wait for it. I want you to see, because I want to prove a point. And just as he thought that he had, you know, he thought I was crazy, the thing started making the moaning and groaning sound. I'm telling you, it sounded like a pornographic movie playing. You should have seen the look on that guy's face, and he's looking at me, and I said, that's what it was doing in my house. And he goes, what is that? And he got over, and all of a sudden it started jumping around. We never did figure out what was wrong with it. All I know is that the lights went out in the store. It totally blacked out that whole store. Mm-hmm. I never did go back to that store, by the way. Don't ever go there. I can't tell you which one it is because it's a national franchise, you know, department store that sells a lot of appliances.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have any real horror stories about microwaves. I currently have a built-in one because that's what came with the trailer. And it makes some noises every now and again, but it hasn't done anything really bizarre. And so I really, you know, we have an agreeable relationship. It gets used a lot to reheat things and whatnot, but that's about the extent of it. I don't actually cook a lot in the microwave. You know, when I make layered enchiladas, I may do that in the microwave because that comes out okay. But most things, I don't like how they come out in the microwave. You know, so unless it's something that's really moist, I don't usually use the microwave to cook it.
Mine was just a glorified popcorn popper. I just now, when I want popcorn, I'll just go buy a bag, you know, that's already pre-popped. I say, because I won't allow microwaves back in my house. I'm really suspicious of that one coffee maker I have, but that's a whole nother story and a whole nother show.
Oh, you know, sure I used to kill coffee makers. I started feeling like a, you know, some sort of a serial killer. You know, I'd buy a coffee maker and I'd plug it in and I'd use it for a while and it would just die. You know, and eventually I started feeling like I needed to wrap them up in a plastic bag and sneak out to the dumpster and dispose of them with nobody looking. Because
that's how I would die.
Yeah, I was a serial killer of coffee mates. but yeah, you know, one after another after another, and Christmas before last, Greg got me this beautiful coffee maker. It was really, really cool. It had an integrated water filter. It was the most expensive coffee maker I'd ever had for myself. And it worked beautifully and made the most wonderful coffee. And one day, it just quit. All the lights and bells and the whistles still worked, but it didn't brew coffee. So it became a very large, bulky clock. And I was so disgusted because it lasted a day longer than the warranty. And I was so disgusted, I was like, you know what, you know, it didn't do any better than my $9.95 one did. It made better coffee while it lasted, but, you know. Anyhow, we did without a coffee maker for about a year, year and a half, I guess, either doing percolated coffee on the stove or... I have this little gizmo I love. It sits on top of your coffee mug, you put in a cone filter, you put your coffee in, pour in your hot water, and voila, you have drip coffee. And one cup at a time is perfect. You never have to drink burnt or stale coffee. I have to admit, I really, really hate coffee that's been sitting on a burner for hours. I think it's disgusting. Yeah. Tastes burnt to me. So the fresh coffee every time, even though it was kind of a pain to make it that way, it was, you know, it was good coffee. And then a couple months ago, we invested in another, I think it was $6.95 for the coffee maker at a discount store. And it's worked just fine. It makes perfectly acceptable coffee. Makes a lot of hot water, because we do use it a lot to make hot water for tea and cocoa and whatever else, you know. And it's worked just fine. It's already paid for itself, and I figure it's actually been cheaper per day of usage than the one that lasted for one day past the warranty. But I do, you know, customer service happens to be, my biggest complaint of 2010 is customer service from corporations. I am so tired of giving them my American dollar so I can call customer service in some foreign country. And then, you know, be told, we can't do anything about this for 48 hours. Well, what are you waiting for? A sign from God? You know, tell me. Why can't we? You can take my money now, but you can't, you know, tell me why. And, yeah, so, yeah, 2010 has been the year of geo-complaining about customer service. And, you know, I genuinely feel that, you know, American companies should use American based call centers for their customer service. And one of the biggest offenders for that is Microsoft. Now, for anybody who has ever had a complaint with Microsoft in the last year, talking to a human requires something more than an act of Congress. I never did manage to talk to a human. We went through a streak of they were charging me, it was like $28, $29 every Tuesday. But they wouldn't tell me why. I asked for an invoice. Couldn't get an invoice. I asked what I was paying for, and I couldn't get an answer. They wanted a screenshot. A screenshot of what? You know, my bank account? I mean, come on. I finally, because I couldn't get any answer from them, I finally had to cancel that card, dispute the charges, and then, you know, what is it, 60 days or 90 days or whatever after you dispute charges, you get your money back. And I no longer will pay for anything with them online except with one of those disposable cards, you know, you go put money on, like a Walmart or whatever, and, you know, it only has that much money on it. Yeah, that's how I pay for things with that particular company now, because I just don't want to go through that again. It's a pain to have to go cancel your card.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I've been there, done there. But I do agree with you, customer service, because I know that the phone company that I'm using currently, I think they have me a special line just for me because they know it's me. They don't even ask for my name. They know, you know, they'll say, hello, Miss Cole. And I don't, What can we do for you? And you can hear it in their voice. Oh, God, it's her again.
You know, I went through absolute hell over my Tassimo coffee maker, which is a wonderful gizmo. It brews your coffee by the cup. It has these little cartridges you put in, and you can make cappuccinos or hot chocolate or tea or coffee or whatever, and it even frosts your milk for you. I mean, it's really a neat gizmo. And I really liked it because there's a number of these companies out. I tried the Keurig machine, and the coffee was okay, but I got better coffee from my $6.95 machine, I thought. I really didn't see a reason to buy a special machine to make it by cup. You know, it just didn't make sense. The Tassimo machine, however, made really good coffee equivalent of going to a coffee shop. And you can even get the Starbucks coffee for it. Okay, so it made wonderful coffee. And then I decided I was going to order some stuff directly from Tassimo. That turned into a nightmare. The website wouldn't take my card. It kept saying that the little security number was wrong. And so I thought it didn't go through. So I called the bank. It was like a day or two later to take care of something else. And I was like, and by the way, this number here, I was told, you know, when I was trying to order something that, it was an invalid number. They said, no, that number's fine, but that company has charged you 6 times. I'm like, what? I don't want six identical orders, and so I called the company. And that turned into a nightmare. I was livid. I finally ended up canceling the order. So then they send me the gizmo I needed, which was a cleaning disc for cleaning the machine. And as an apology for how awful that transaction had become. And I was like, well, that was nice of them. So I put in the cleaning disc, and the machine tells me that I need to call customer service or consult my owner's manual. The owner's manual tells me to call customer service. I'm like, oh, no, here we go again. They pronounce the machine dead and defective. I'm like, great. They're going to send me a new one because it's still in the warranty. Okay, fine. How soon am I going to get this machine? Well, you're supposed to receive it in 10 to 14 working days. Okay, fine. I can look at that. So 2.5 months later, I'm like, has this machine, because there's been a number of calls in between, has this machine been sent? They didn't know. I said, where is the machine coming from? Is it in the United States? Well, it's supposed to be coming from PA. I thought that was really odd to hear from someone who didn't live in Pennsylvania, because usually they're the only ones that say PA. And this person obviously didn't, because their English was not their first language. And so my conclusion was they didn't know where PA was. And so, or what it stood for. Anyhow, eventually the machine did show up. And it's already shown signs of being possessed again. And to be honest, because of the fact that the coffee is expensive and can't be used in any other machine, when the cartridges I have are gone, the machine's going away. It's too much of a nightmare to deal with the company. Absolutely. I think my review of it said it's a perfect gift for the hated mother-in-law. So they great coffee and aggravation.
All in for the same price. There you go.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's a perfect gift for a hated mother-in-law because you can aggravate her forever.
Yeah, I like that idea. I have to keep that in mind. But no, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's, I like the way it was back when we were younger. You know, customer service actually meant that the customer got served. Now you have to do more work than the people that are actually working for the company.
You know, it's really, really nice when you do deal with a company that normally has really good customer service, when that's norm. And, you know, so you try to remember those companies, because I know that Overstock.com is a company that actually usually has pretty good customer service. I had a nightmare experience once, filed a complaint with them about it, and they really bent over backwards to fix the situation. They'd really ticked me off, but, you know, it could have been a bad day where, and I don't remember exactly what the customer service rep did, but they just aggravated the tar out of me.
And, you know, that was an exception to the rule, because I have bought things from them for years and never had a complaint. Amazon's a place that I have never had a problem, you know, and those kind of companies, it's no wonder that they become large, well-respected companies. But I guess I've been telling everybody, you know, you don't have to take crappy customer service as the norm. You know, stand up, holler, demand better. Because if you're paying premium price for a product, you expect the product to work, and you expect customer service, when there is a problem, to try to help you. Now, granted, you can't make everybody happy all the time. Anybody who's ever worked with customers knows this. There are some people that, no matter what you do, they're not going to be happy. You can give it to them free, and they're still not going to be happy. You know, and that is a fact of life. So when you're reading reviews, you need to remember that. But you do need to read reviews before you make your purchases, because it'll tell you a lot, not only about the product, but about the company. And
oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, when you consistently see remarks about crappy customer service or foreign-based customer service, then, you know, I don't feel you should pay as much for it, product. If I'm going to have to take the risk, it's like buying something from eBay instead of buying it from, you know, a normal vendor. It's when you buy from eBay, you expect to get a better price because you're taking more risk. And the same thing I hold true for companies with crappy customer service track records. Yeah, I'm not going to pay as much for them. And I do take customer service into consideration when I'm reading reviews before I ever buy a product, because I've been researching. I've decided that I need a GPS system. The GPS in my phone is going to get me lost someday. I need a dedicated GPS system. Besides that, I could have a different phone package if I change companies that may not include the GPS service, because a lot of companies charge a lot more for it. And so I was like, okay, I would rather have a dedicated GPS. And initially I thought, okay, I'll go with Magellan because their updates are so much cheaper. Well, I even wrote it in my blog that I was going to go with a Magellan. Then I continued reading, and then I discovered, oh, no, you don't. First of all, you have to, they hide this extra fee because you can't download their updates. You have to send them a check for the disk to be sent to you. And so you can't get them instantly. I'm into this instant thing. I love instant gratification, you know. If I'm going to pay for it online, why can't I just get it online? Especially if it's, you know, data that could go right into the gizmo, right? You can't do that with Magellan. You have to send for this disk to be inserted into the machine. Well, okay, that kind of stinks, and I don't like that hidden fee, that hidden $10 shipping and handling fee. That stinks, too. You know, it's not a free update if you're going to pay $10 for it, as far as I'm concerned. And so, you know, the other companies, Magellan, Garmin, and TomTom are three big companies. Garmin actually gets better customer service reviews, so I will probably go with Garmin. Even though, you know, the Magellan initially looked like a less expensive option. Oh, yeah. You know, I do consider that when I'm going through my purchases. Because 2010 was the year of customer service complaint. I want 2011 to be the year of customer service satisfaction. Yeah. So what was your big complaint of 2010?
2010, let me see, what was my biggest complaint? Stupid people. I got more than my fair share of stupid people this year. I'm going to try to cut back in 2011. I believe, and trust me when I'm saying stupid people, I'm not saying people that are uneducated or illiterate. I'm talking about people who know better but do it anyway, okay?
Uh-huh.
And most people call that crazy. No, crazy is doing the same thing in the same exact way expecting different results. No, I'm talking about people who do it just because they know it's going to drive me crazy.
Well, you know, earlier today I was looking online and Onion News, for everybody who's never heard of Onion News, Google it. But Onion News had a report on there about how everybody needs to go, so much of the United States right now is having snowstorms, and everybody needs to check on the idiots in their neighborhood to make sure they're not standing outside in the snowbank nude. But apparently there's been a large number of idiot deaths as a result of the snowstorm due to various activities being indulged in.
See, this is what I'm talking about.
You may be avoiding some idiots because the snowstorm is going to do Darwin's natural selection.
I mean, you know, but no, that's my biggest complaint because someone had asked me that earlier today, and I said, I'm going to stand by it. I got an overabundance of stupid people. Thankfully, they're not in my life anymore because I did get rid of them. And y'all can take that any way you want. Anyway. And they don't call me the duct tape diva for nothing.
You didn't go alligator hunting by chance, did you?
No, but I sent a few people snipe hunting. But anyway, I don't expect to see them for a long time because these are really stupid people. But no, there's just some people that, you know, you wonder how they got as far in life as they have. You know, it makes me wonder. Okay, and I sit back and I just sit there in awe of it all. Okay, I'll get, you know, if somebody's asking, okay, what do you define as a stupid person? Well, let me give you an example. On four different occasions, yours truly almost got ran over by some idiot who was talking on their cell phone. Oh, one time they were actually texting on their cell phone while they were driving a car down the street, not watching where they're going. I was taking out my trash can, okay, trash day, you know. And I happened, you know, this is where being psychic comes in handy, okay, because, you know, I get this little premonition, you know, don't linger like you usually do, Julia, because usually when I'm out there taking out the trash, I'm, you know, bending over, picking up trash, putting it in the trash can. Well, I got this little premonition, you know, real quick flash, and I was sitting there thinking, I said, I wonder what that's about, you know, because I'm kind of dumb myself sometimes. I'm thinking, well, I wonder what that's all about. I'm just taking out the trash, you know, how dangerous could it be to take out the trash when all of a sudden I saw her coming in her big Cadillac, okay, barreling down the street. People are running and yelling and screaming. It was like the end of the world right there. And I said, oh, my God, she's coming right for me. She got up on my, she ran me back up on my front porch, but she was on the sidewalk before she realized, oops, and she was holding her cell phone. That's a stupid person. And then me and my daughter were walking across the street, what, 3 days later? And we had the light. This lady, I looked up, and I pushed my daughter back up on the sidewalk. I said, get back on the sidewalk, because this idiot's getting ready to run a red light. And she was texting on her phone while she was driving down a busy street. Thankfully, there was a policeman handy. She got arrested, because it is against the law to use your phone while you're driving here. But that's just, you know, stupid people, or people who call me up and ask me, you know, the obvious question, are you a psychic? I've actually had people call me up and ask me that. Are you a psychic? Well, and I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I did, and I knew you was going to call me and ask me that. And, you know, I'm just sitting there, yeah, these are stupid people, honey. Don't call up a psychic and ask them if they're a psychic, okay? We don't find that funny, okay? But, yeah, those are, you know, and hopefully in 2011, all the stupid people will have moved, like, you know, to the moon or something. I can only hope. That's my biggest gripe is people and their stupid crap, okay? You know,
there used to be a song I used to sing or I played on the guitar, and it was Stupid Questions was, I think, the name of it. But it was the whole song was about stupid questions that people ask.
you know, like a neighbor stops you on the sidewalk as you're heading out and asks you where you're going, and you say, oh, I'm going to my uncle's funeral. Oh, did he die?
Yeah.
Why? We're just having a funeral, you know?
No, we just thought we'd have a trial run. Okay, yeah.
You know, and another verse had, you know, an elevator fell 7 floors, and firemen pry open the door, and they look in and say, are you all right? you know, people do ask really, really stupid questions sometimes, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, my grandmother had a saying, there are no stupid questions, just stupid people.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, but that's one of my pet peeves, is asking the obvious, you know. You know, and my mother was probably the worst person. We used to call her Captain Obvious. And, you know, I tell her I'm getting ready to go, and I'm putting on my coat, and she says, you ain't gone yet? No, Mother, I haven't gone. That's very good, honey. That's very good. Now, how many fingers am I holding up? She said, I don't think that's funny. I said, well, I did, and I'm going now. How long are you going to be? As long as it takes me. I love, and it's usually country people that will ask you the really dumb questions just to pass the time.
Well, part of it, you know, I think, too, is kind of a tradition. Because, you know, there's that cultural thing when you're a country person. And it varies between parts of the country. You know, when you live in the West, especially in remote areas, it's rude to wait to greet someone until they come and knock on your door. You've heard that car coming from 5 miles away. You know they're coming. So if you don't go outside and greet them, they really are not a welcome guest. And, you know, there's so many things that you do, and you really don't think about them until you move to another part of the country, you know. Because when somebody came to your house, it was almost like a law. You had to offer them food and drink. And I don't care if you're hungry or not, you better eat and drink something.
Yeah, it was
well,
like
it's a cultural thing. You know, if you refuse the food and drink as a guest, you are refusing the hospitality, in a sense. And that's rude. And if they don't offer it to you, they're saying you're not welcome. And, you know, there's another saying, and it comes from another part of the country, about, you know, breaking a plate. Well, you know, if somebody's out, stayed their welcome, you break the plate. Well, there's no plate for them to eat on now.
Now, see, in Greek, that would be because you like the food.
You'd break the plate?
Yeah, you break the plate. Oompah!
Uh-huh. No, it's, and I found that a rather curious one. Another one is a saying, and we said this all the time, when somebody would, you know, pull up to your house, you'd say, well, why don't you get off and come on in? Get off the car and come on in. I guess it dates from the days when you got off the horse. I don't know.
Get off the buggy, yeah.
But, you know, why don't you get off and come on in? And, you know, moving to the South, when I would say that to people, they would look at me like I said something really stupid. Or the other day, even, I had a little bit of coffee left in the coffee pot. And I poured a cup for Greg, and I was going to make another pot. I said, why don't you drink that down, and I'll give you another piece of coffee. He looked at me like I was speaking Greek. Well, you know, yeah, a piece of coffee.
And a steak of air. And you go visit mom and them. You know, it's a mom and them. You know, what's a mom and them, my folks?
Uh-huh. Yeah. How's your mom and them?
It is kind of funny when you said listen, because people, you know, tease me all the time and say, well, you sure don't sound like you're from Kentucky. And I said, well, I am. I was born and raised here, and no, I don't talk like that. Yeah, but I can if you want me to. Yet, no. But, yeah, I like that one. Yet, no, I ain't. But, you playing on too? Yeah, I am. But no, you're right, because it was like at my mom's house, if you refused, you know, to eat, if she offered you some, she was very insulted. She was very insulted. You know, she'd get really huffy. You know, me, I'm totally different. If you know, if you don't eat my food, that just means that you ate here before and you know better to do it the second time around. Oh, you've been here before.
You know, I tell people that I've never had a fatal case from my food yet. It might have gotten kind of sick and had to go to the hospital, but no, it's never been fatal. No, I am a pretty good cook, and I do eat fine even if I'm cooking over a campfire. So, you know, I know that when I'm offering somebody something that it's not going to be too terribly horrible. Although if they show up on a ramen noodle night, it might not be all that wonderful. But, hey, you know, at least I'm not opening a can of Helpo, right?
That's true. I can open up, you know, but it's still tradition, though, when anybody comes in the house, you offer them something to drink, you know.
Uh-huh.
Hats off, you know, I do offer people a glass of water on occasion. And of course, I always follow it up with a question, do you want that in a clean glass?
Ah, clean glass, yeah.
Yeah, you know, clean glasses are optional around here, you know.
Yeah.
But, but like I said, you know, hopefully, you know, 2011, it will be, you know, at least down to 80% stupid, you know, no, you know, less stupid people, and hopefully the snowstorm will do away with a lot of that.
Yeah, but really looking towards the future, you know, a big thing everybody's worried about is the economy, okay? And, you know, even I have worries about the economy, you know, what does the job outlook look like? Are there going to be jobs available for people? You know, are things going to improve? Is this continual struggle just going to remain a continual struggle, or are we going to see an end come to it?
You are actually, it's already started. The momentum won't pick up until March, where everybody will actually see the manifestation of the economy improving. The ball got started rolling back in October, actually. The energy shifted over. And good news, folks, there will be more people back at work by the end of 2011. The economy has taken a turn for the better. And I got my validation when they gave the report on how well, you know, the stores did this year. They could have done a lot better, but they did better compared to last year. So the ball has been, you know, the proverbial ball has been kicked into place, and it is rolling down the hill and gaining momentum. And by the end of 2011, unemployment will be down. And this is my official prediction for 2011. Unemployment will be down by 7%.
Well, that would be nice.
And that will be an overall improvement. Now, if you want to improve it even more, and prove me wrong, and hike that percentage up, get in contact with your Congress people, your senators, get everybody involved, and scream as loud as you can that you want, you know, the jobs here. Demand that Congress take a pay cut. Demand that the Senate take a pay cut until everybody is back to work. And then you can prove Julia wrong by upping the percentage to 10 and 15%. Because I love being proved wrong, you know, especially when it's going in a more positive direction.
Well, you know, they're talking about the economy here on the Gulf Coast is expected to lag the national economy as far as improvement goes, because there had been a long-term job issue prior to the Great Recession, as they call it now. And, you know, I use the flea market economics lesson. Okay, when you go to the flea market, I watch a lot. I talk to vendors, I talk to people, I watch a lot. I find the flea markets very entertaining. And the last couple years in the flea market arena on Black Friday weekend, there hasn't been a whole lot going on. Okay? Mm-hmm. People weren't buying. Now this last year, at going to the flea market, people were buying. But I noticed that the number of vendors was down. A lot of vendors that had always been there with their products weren't there anymore. Those products were no longer available. There was a lot of cheap Chinese junk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll admit that. There was a lot of that. There wasn't a lot of the American-made stuff. There wasn't a lot of the local stuff anymore. That stuff was gone. But people were buying. Now, were they buying because they couldn't afford to go buy in a department store or what? I don't know. But people were buying more than they had been, especially last year. Last year, there was virtually no buying going on. But it was kind of sad to see that the number of small local companies, and flea market companies are the smallest of the small, usually. It's, you know, one or two people, and they usually don't have any employees or anything. But it's a huge part of our national economy, actually. And they weren't there anymore. Those locally made goods were not available at all. And that was kind of a big shock because, you know, there were none this year. And last year there were still a few hanging on, but none of them had made it through the last year. Now, did they simply not come because it was no longer considered a important venue? No, I really honestly think that they went by the wayside, that it was no longer possible for those companies to stay in existence, that yeah. They just couldn't make ends meet. And that was kind of sad. So we will see what the coming year brings. Hopefully, the Gulf Coast will rebound rather quickly.
And it will. It will, but you, like I said, we won't really see the manifestation. And it's in by, like I said, by this time next year, you will see a vast improvement. I mean, it overall.
Yeah, here for everything. Everything seems to rotate around the shipbuilding industry.
Mm-hmm.
If ships aren't being built, there's not much economy going on because everything sort of bounces off of that. When those shipbuilding crews are not here with their money to spend, then a lot of other companies aren't here either. And shipbuilding seems to be rather depressed right now because the big shipbuilding companies are laying off, not hiring. And they've been laying off and shutting down yards for the last 5 years. So even though we're at war, apparently there's not a huge Defense Department budget for new ships, and certainly not a cruise ship or a freightliner ship being industry going on right now either. There's not a lot of shipbuildings. I don't know if they're being built overseas, which the thought of U.S. Navy ships being built overseas to me is rather horrific.
Yeah.
We may be looking at it.
Well, that's why I always encourage people to get involved, you know, and call Washington. If you don't know who your congressperson is, then
You can find it online. You can find out who your congressman is online.
Exactly. And call them. Make a nuisance of yourself because they are your employee. And if you don't like the job they're doing, then they need to hear from their bosses. And they need to hear from them very often. I'm in close contact with, you know, Senator McConnell because I grew up with the McConnell family here. So, you know, and I'm always, you know, calling at least or emailing once a week. You know,
yep.
I'm a burr up their
squeaky,
butt, let's put it this
squeaky
way.
Squeaky doors get the oil.
Yeah. And you can't expect them to read your mind, okay? You do have to make the effort. It doesn't take that long to make a phone call and leave a message. You know, write an email. They, you know, just go on over and find out. Make yourself known. Let
mm-hmm.
your voice be heard because it is the government of the people, for the people, and you're a people.
Yep, and if you're not registered to vote, do so.
Absolutely.
But guess what, Julia? We have run out of time once again. Yeah, it's over already. Isn't that sad? I would like to thank Julia K. Cole for joining us tonight and being such a great guest. I've had a great time, Julia.
Me too. And Happy New Year to everybody.
Yes, everybody have a great New Year. Folks, I've enjoyed the program with Julia tonight. I hope all of you have as well, and that you found it provided you with plenty of food for thought and more illumination for personal journey towards truth. Join us again next week for another episode of The Dawn of Shades, which is sure to be another fascinating conversation with our guest as we talk with Christopher Knowles, the author of The Secret History of Rock and Roll. With that, we are out of time. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and good night.
And twiddling the knobs, are you ready?